Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, welcome to Island Issues. We have so many things going on right now in Hawaii County with the lava flow, and I am lucky enough today to be in the Hilo office of our acting mayor, Will Okabe, who under normal circumstances is the managing director, meaning the man who really takes care of a lot of the day-to-day activities in the county. But with Harry Kim being ill, Will Okabe is our mayor. Aloha, Will.
Aloha.
So, Will, I wanted to talk about some lava-related issues, and the first thing is we have a lot of evacuees still staying in the community center and in the Kea'au Armory. What are we looking at relative to improved short-term housing for these folks so they don't have to stay in the community center?
Well, one of the things that we're doing is we're trying to organize a task force with the governor's office, county, the federal government, and along with faith-based churches, to try to look at a comprehensive plan to look at that very issue that you're talking about.
In other disasters that we've seen in recent times, FEMA has brought in trailers for folks to live in for short-term housing, and I'm curious why FEMA isn't doing something that's a little more aggressive to help our folks, because I think we have about, well, several hundred people still in the shelters. So why is FEMA not contributing that kind of help right now?
That has never been a discussion in regards to mobile shelters. We haven't discussed that, but if that's a possibility, we are more than welcome that effort to do that. But our plan is basically to get a shelter. We have two sites in Pahoa and one in Kea'au, and the next one is going to be, they were able to get the faith-based organization to get, I think, 20 tiny homes built in a week. So we're going to try to capitalize on that. There are other churches that are interested in doing that as well. And then we're going to look at transitional housing for all of these things are in the plan once we get this task force organized.
What do you think the exact number of people is who actually need, at this point, short-term housing, not longer-term, but short-term, to get them out of the community centers?
Well, I think maybe about 300 or 400 people are affected. Yesterday, I think that the latest count through the FEMA applications was about 800 people that applied for some kind of assistance. So the scope is big, is very big, but we understand that there are actually people that were not in the Leilani or Kapoho or the vacation land area in the shelters as well. So they're homeless as well. We have the largest homeless population in the state of Hawaii. So we need to address that.
Well, so what you're saying is those folks who were initially homeless, meaning not what I would call the unintended homeless from the lava flow, but you're talking about regular homeless folks are staying in the shelters as well?
Yes. So, you know, we have identified some, but we are not going to be turning them away. We have been providing meals 3 times a day and giving all the services necessary for them to get back on their feet.
So short-term housing, you're hoping that this task force comes up with some immediate solutions. What about a longer-term look? Because clearly folks need to have a longer-term plan. If they lived in Leilani or Lanipuna or Kapoho and their homes are either lava-locked, meaning they just can't get to them, or they have been overrun, it's a tragic situation for them. But what about longer-term looks, new communities or whatever? What's the county thinking about now?
That's a very good point. I think that one of the things that we're looking at is how these families can also relocate in existing communities. There's a lot of vacant lots in other communities, whether it's in Nana Valley, in Paradise Park, and we can identify probably in anywhere from Kea'au. But it has to be in an area that is Zone 3, not in Zone 1 or 2. But we want to give them an opportunity to move into those areas as well. But we want to make sure that we have a plan, a comprehensive solution to the situation that we're in. We don't want to rush into it. We're looking at land swap. Land swap would be considered a public lands, which the DLNR would be involved, the state, where we're trying to look at areas that we can house these people or give them opportunities to move into those particular areas. So it really is a comprehensive plan that we're working with this task force to try to implement as quickly as possible.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing when you look at longer term housing. If one owns a piece of property and they had a house and now it's overrun with lava, part of the question is, whose responsibility is it to help them get a new place? Is it up to the county to foot the cost? Do they build their own house? Is it a direct land swap? How does that typically work?
Well, that's been the biggest concern for many of our citizens on the Big Island and throughout the state as to what happens now that the lava has gone over someone's property. It's now maybe 25, 30 feet up in the air. If you look at what happened in Kalapana, and you drive down Kalapana, you'll see people that have built on the lava, on stilts, and they have no water. Some of them is off the grid, but it's still their land. So we might have a situation where people will want to move back into that particular subdivision to do just that. We're not sure. But we have to look at what the state and the federal government is going to do in regards to how do we assess the value. Right now the value is zero, right? So do we look at the value that before the lava came? The smaller lots probably are $10,000 for X amount of square feet. A lot of the property are maybe about an acre lots. So that's going to be assessed more. But all of those things that we have to assess, then we have to try to work out with the state and also the federal government to see how we can do that. It's going to be a very big challenge. The mayor's goal is to try to look at transitional homes and try to make a permanent community out of this opportunity. We have identified land, DLNR land, in Zone 3 in Puna area because kind of feel that a lot of the people like living down in Puna. They don't want to be displaced, maybe in Kona or in Hilo. So we have to look at that. But we want to give them opportunity to also look at areas within existing communities as well.
It's unbelievably tricky when I think about other kinds of disasters, hurricanes. The property is usually still there. And you could rebuild a house, for example. But this is tricky when you talk about telling people, well, we've got this land here and that land there. You know, when you buy a house, you buy a house based on where it is and what the vegetation is and what the view might be. And then you're going to get into the situation of who gets what lot where. And that's also kind of tricky.
Exactly. You know, like you mentioned earlier about people that are landlocked, their house might be intact and the lava has gone around their area. They won't have access to their property. So what will happen if they decide to do that? How are they going to get access? The county at this present time does not have the funds to build roads to individual homes. So you might have one home that is there in so many acres of land, but that's the only home there. Well, like in Kapoho, there's about 25 or 35 homes. They can't get down to the Kapoho area because that Four Corners area is inundated with lava. So does the county become the responsible person to make a road so that 35 people can get to their homes? Those are going to be the questions that the county and the state or FEMA to look at resources so that that can happen. But at the present time, the county does not have, since the GET tax did not pass, that was four roads. That would have addressed that. And that's why it was a needed tax. But we're going to do everything that we can to try to make normalcy for the people that are living down there. I think that's what government does, is that when there is a disaster, they look to government to look for relief, whether it's in New Orleans, whether it's in Puerto Rico. It's the government that comes in to try to bring them back to normalcy.
You touched upon this when you said you want to try to find suitable housing for folks in Lava Zone 3. Will the county issue building permits for people to build in the future in Lava Zone 1 or 2?
I don't know about Lava 1 and 2, but Lava 3, we're looking at doing that. The discussion hasn't been in Lava 1 and 2 because in that particular area, Sherry, anything can happen. I mean, even in Kalapana, the lava is flowing under all of that area. So it's on a rift. You know, just a couple years ago or so, you know, it was coming and threatening Pahoa Town. They had to move the school, Keonepoko, to Keao. So it's very unpredictable. We don't know. It could last maybe 2 more months or 3 more months, like a 1968 lava flow, or could last for years, as the lava has been flowing for almost 30 years. Everything is up in the air. We don't know. We really don't know. If we had the magic wand, we'd be able to do it, but we really don't know.
I'm sure you're familiar with the book Land and Power in Hawaii by Gavin Dawes and George Cooper. They've got one chapter, chapter 8, for anybody who wants to read it, and it's all about how the property was allowed to be developed in this area, Leilani Estates, Royal Gardens, and frankly, it's a fascinating chapter because it names names of so many connected political figures who approved subdivisions that perhaps shouldn't have been because the lava just flowed there, same rift zone in 1955. So back to my question, what kind of discussions is the county having about whether to grant building permits in Lava Zone 1 and maybe in Lava Zone 2? But let's just start with Lava Zone 1. Do we want to give official county permission for those homes to be built again?
No, really, we have to look at that. You know, the reason why people have built in Lava 1 and 2, because the land is much, much cheaper than every place else. I'm sure insurance companies will not be giving them the full coverage for their home. And I don't know if the banks are going to be loaning them money. So all those things are going to come into effect. So we really haven't had a discussion in regards to how the county permit system is going to be looking at Lava 1 or Lava 2. We have been approving them for many, many years. We have to maybe address that. But, you know, I really don't know what the future about that is. You know, that particular area, like my wife's family's beach home, was there for over 40 years. And Harry bought his place in vacation land in 1970 or so. So building something in an area, you take risks. And it was a very special place, but the land value is much cheaper than everywhere else. It's affordable for people who live in those areas, and that's their home. They might not be able to afford a place in Kona and spend maybe $200,000 or $300,000 for a small lot. But in Puna, they were able to do that. And the risk is that, you know, if 30 or 40 years and not getting destroyed, that opportunity to have a home, I think, is a driving force. You know, let's look at the people that they don't want to move out of that place, Sherry. They still want to move back into an area that has high Osotu levels. But that's their home. They lost everything that they have, some people, but the ones that are standing, they still want to move back there. And it's a constant ask because the county is looking after their well-being. Not everybody agrees with that idea. The people that are living down there, they feel that that's their home and we shouldn't tell them they should be evacuated. But our responsibility is to protect the people. Harry always made a comment that under his watch, he does not want to see anybody die. And in this particular situation, there was no panic. Nobody died from this activity. Everything was very well organized from the first fissure that came out in Leilani. We were well prepared. And we're having the support from the governor, to the federal government, to even President Trump, setting up those proclamations, and FEMA coming down and the National Guard. So everything was very well organized, and that's where we are today. So if you go down to Puna today, or you go down to Keao High School and look at the opportunity that FEMA has done, you can talk to them, and they can say that no place throughout the nation that this civil defense activity is the way we are doing it here. And we have to credit, you know, Harry Kim for taking the helm as mayor, and also teaching the people at the civil defense. And he was doing this from the time he came into office this term. You know, every morning at 6:30 in the morning, going down there and reviewing these kind of things. Whether it's a flood, whether it's a tsunami, whether it's rain, whether it's snow, and whether it's a lava flow or earthquake, those guys at civil defense are very well prepared, and they've been trained very well by Harry.
Well, you know, I just recorded an interview with Jay Ignacio, the president of HELCO, and Kevin Walchin, the general manager, just about the kind of challenges that HELCO is facing and has been facing, and that'll air in a couple of weeks. One of the things that Jay Ignacio mentioned was how valuable the way the Emergency Operations Center is set up, that when he needed the State Department of Transportation to grease the skids, grease the wheels exactly, to allow HELCO to shut down a highway temporarily to get their facilities in place and moved, he said it was so easy because we were sitting right next to each other at the EOC. So the EOC is very well organized from that standpoint.
Yeah, there's no question that HELCO has, even the water department, has been very accommodating to keep electricity in that area, keeping water in that area, so that people can sustain, you know, normalcy in their life. But I think that it's a teamwork effort. Every agency in the county, along with the state and the federal government, has really done their work in trying to work as a team to try to brainstorm ideas to address the situation.
And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. We're on the radio on Big Island on Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country, 107.7 FM, and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And then we post these as podcasts at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. I wanted to mention a couple of additional things about our conversation with Will Okabe. We recorded the interview on Wednesday. At the time, Harry Kim was still in the hospital, but I knew he was getting out. But Will was acting mayor at that time. Harry Kim came back on the job on Thursday, despite the fact that Will confirmed for me that he does have 20% heart function and he's still suffering from pneumonia. So we hope he gets better. A couple of other things. During this visit over there to Will Okabe's office, I did go by, as Will suggested, the Keaʻau Armory, which has about 50 people staying there, and Pahoa Community Center. And Pahoa Community Center manager told me that out of the 300 people they have, about 30 to 40% are not folks affected by the lava flow, but people who are chronic homeless. And it doesn't sound like it's a really positive situation to have those two groups mixing together. So I am hoping the county takes a more aggressive stand in trying to get people off of the floor of the community centers, because that's just not a good long-term solution now. It's been more than 7 weeks. The other thing is, County Council initially rejected the idea of raising the general excise tax, but they will be reconsidering it this coming Friday, June 29th. And if you have an opinion, you should go and testify. The raise in the GE tax would either be 25 cents or 50 cents on $100. So it's not that great, and it would be an additional source of income. This week, Wednesday, I record an interview with U.S. Rep. Colleen Hanabusa, who's running for governor. Please send questions if you have them. info@lava105.com. Let's get back to our discussion with Will Okabe. I appreciate what you say, that when people choose to build in Lava Zone 1, and obviously even more so when they do so with county permission by getting a building permit, that they are taking a risk. And then it comes back to the question, should we, the taxpayers, bear the cost for individuals making a decision to build in a risky area, which means should the county continue to allow that? Because right now it's the taxpayers of this county who are going to be bearing the cost of a lot of this that's going on.
I can understand that if you look at it as an economical sense, and to try to be very objective or to look at that situation is in that perspective. But you know, in this situation, I've learned that when people are in need, I think it's expected that government is there to provide safety and protection for everyone on this island. I feel so sympathetic about the people who have lost everything, that you one day, in 1 week, you had a home, especially in Kapoʻo or in Leilani, or even in vacation land that might have cost $1 million or $500,000. And you put your savings and everything into this home, and within 1 week, it's gone. And not knowing where to go, what help that you can ask for, I think they always will look to government to try to give them an opportunity or an avenue for them to get back on their feet. If we don't address that, if we don't do that, then the homeless population will continue to grow. We've already had the highest per capita on this island, but now it has surpassed that. These people are working people. They go to the shelters and they go to work and they come back. It's not the same as living in your home. There are many, many challenges, but We're just trying to find a way to help them.
I think that everybody on the island really commends the county and all the agencies, and in fact, everybody who's donated, that providing the short-term help, the immediate help, until people can get out of those shelters is the right thing to do. And I was really more referring to, is it up to the county and the taxpayers to bear the risk of building new homes, or more, letting folks go back into Lava Zone 1 and maybe doing this cycle again in another 50 years, by which time I'll probably not own a property here anymore because I will have passed it on to somebody, but who knows? Anyway, that was the only point. But let's get to the budget. You've talked about the money, and clearly right now we have a budget shortfall. As I understand it, the $518 million budget has about a $5 million shortfall. That's what I was hearing in the recent budget hearings. State government, Governor Ige, thank you very much, has given us, the county, $12 million to cover lava-related expenses, overtime and such, but there's a lot of emphasis on finding the $5 million, and the county council has for now turned down the general excise tax increase. What are you thinking about for $5 million? Because frankly, $5 million on a $518 million budget doesn't sound like a lot of money. It's a very small percentage. So what are you thinking?
Yeah, it may not seem like a lot of money, $5 million, but we're going to have a meeting with Deanna, the finance director, and with the rest of the departments as to how we're going to proceed. There's going to be some cuts to many of the programs. We listed them down and gave that to the council. But no matter what, it is what it is, and we will get a balanced budget, and we will submit it, and we have to deal with it. As far as roads, though, the intent of that particular bill was for roads. So just the lava alone damaged a lot of roads. We have a lot of roads in Kona. So we have to prioritize. I know we came to a public meeting in Kona and that was addressed. So we're going to have to look at all of these things and prioritize. It's not going to be an easy task, it's going to be challenges, but we will get a balanced budget. So the determination will be to see, as far as priorities, what areas are we going to cut? Park and Recreation is the largest department, so we know already that we're going to be cutting a lot of things in Park and Recreation. We're looking at the landfill of how we're going to be maybe cutting the hours, looking at readjusting maybe the schedule of when it's going to be open. That's two things. I know people are talking about more police officers or firemen. I don't know if we're going to be able to address that in this particular shortfall. But we're going to have to do something, because what happened when we came into office is that all the negotiated contracts was done this past year. So when we had negotiated contracts on salary and wages, it affects the budget a great deal. So I believe it's 63% of the budget is salaries and wages. 75% of the budget is the property tax, 75%. We also have fuel tax, and we also have weight tax. So those other parts makes up the 100% of the total budget. So already with the losses of land value and property and taxes in the Lower Pune area, we're going to be short in that respect too. So we're not going to be able to collect taxes. So this just compounds the challenges that we will have. But, you know, we will be able to come up with a balanced budget, and we will work with what we have. And we have to do that. So we haven't gone into looking at freezing positions as another area. You know, hopefully we don't have to go into layoffs or things like that, or furloughs. But all of those things are going to be options. So we have many, many options. But the first thing we've got to do is we've got to cut some services in the county.
Well, I know that this is not a new issue. I know in the 2009-2010 budget, which was about $367 million, there was a $16 million shortfall. And that was covered partly by freezing positions. And the mayor and his direct reports took salary cuts, but it's historically known that layoffs just don't work, because the higher rated employees can bump the lower rated employees, and what you end up saving is pretty well not much of anything at all. And Deanna Sacco has spoken about that. So hopefully we can find other ways that are not punitive to the county and still allow the folks to not stop functioning, because this is a terrible time to think about cutting park and rec programs, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whatever cuts we made, it's going to be something that we're going to have to discuss at the administration level. But another thing that is coming up, too, is a constitutional amendment. Many of your listeners may not understand that the constitutional amendment is going to take away some of the property taxes for the teachers. So that is going to be a concern statewide, too. So not only that you have only three mm-hmm. sources of revenue for the county government, you know, that particular constitutional amendment may also affect the budget as well. But, you know, when you look at the total budget for us, Kauai passed the GET tax, a 6-1 vote in their council. They're a much smaller island than us. Maui, their budget is $900 million. So Big Island is $500 million or so. All the islands can fit on the Big Island. So when you talk about roads, the only just Oahu alone can fit in the district of Kauai. So the amount of roads that we have compared to any of the islands, it's a lot. And I can understand the frustration of your listeners in regards to roads that are not repaired. But we need to address that. But we need also the revenue to in order to do that. So everything has to be prioritized. And everybody wants their roads. Even downtown Hilo, we have on the main road, there's holes in it. Trust me, I get the calls. You know, if I could get a shovel and I got some blacktop and I could fill it up and they'll see me doing it, I would. But, you know, it's not humanly possible or my capacity to be able to repair every single road on the Big Island because we have so many roads.
You're laughing.
Well, the image of you out there with your shovel and your asphalt bucket is good.
I might do that.
The budget thing is really challenging. Now, you mentioned this constitutional amendment. If I understand the amendment correctly, what it would do is take part of the county property tax collection and turn it over to the state. Is that correct?
The state. It's a teacher's bill that they haven't decided how they're going to do it, but it was a teacher's initiative to do that. So we don't know exactly the language of that bill, of how they're going to implement that for the teachers. But it will have an effect on the budget for every county, not only for Big Island.
Well, you know, I read a really excellent column in the Star Advertiser by David Shapiro. He was talking mm-hmm. about that.
Right.
And he did say the way the proposal is worded is so nonspecific, it was not clear what the money would be used for. It would not be clear that the state would not then just cut the education budget based on how much revenue came in. So I haven't seen the amendment yet, but it doesn't sound like a good thing at this point.
That's correct. I mean, as a former state president, we don't know if that particular amount of money is going to supplement the budget for the teachers' pay raises or increases, or is it that the state is going to say, okay, whatever the money comes out, that's the money that you're going to get for your negotiated contract. So it's not really clear as to how, but we make laws in this state, just like they made the law in regards to the TAT. That tax was basically made for the counties so they can run their activities or the government. So somewhere along the line, they started tapping into the TAT, and now we have just a small percent, and that's the reason why we're in the situation we are today. So the legislature can do anything they want. Whoever you vote for, they have the opportunity to do that, to change rules. That's a concern because it creates a burden, not only for the county government, for the people that live in this community, because every one of us who pay taxes is sharing in this cost.
I realize that we are still managing an active lava flow. It has become slightly more stable, and the county has not yet gone into full recovery mode. But the economy on the island is being obviously drastically affected. Tourism is down. Has anybody yet been able to give some long-term thinking to what needs to be done to really help our longer-term economic recovery?
Well, I think the messaging, we're going to be working with the tourism industry to try to get that message out and sending a message worldwide that Hawaii is open for business. That's basically a small percent, 2% of this island that is affected. And, you know, people are, sometimes media sensationalizes the destruction of the lava. People were canceling their reservations, canceling conferences, canceling airline tickets, and it definitely does affect our economy. But we're going to start to look at an opportunity to look at a way of how we can find a safe place for lava viewing so that not only for our residents here in Hawaii, but also for our tourists to come in to try to stimulate the economy. We're going to let you view it, probably tour, find out a way, a safe way, so that we can get into lava viewing. And that should maybe help. But it has to be done in a very safe way so that in case there's a need to evacuate that particular site, we have a route. If the wind changes for SO2, everything has to be done, but the county is looking at that as an opportunity.
Any idea how soon that might occur?
Well, we've been working on it for about close to 3 weeks already. We're trying to look for a stabilization. And as you mentioned, you know, it has been stable. So we are going to be looking at it more seriously and trying to look at how we can make this work.
I want to ask you about a completely unrelated topic. Before we leave lava, anything you'd like to add about the lava that we haven't discussed?
The only thing is that, you know, I know many of your listeners, you know, are very concerned about our mayor. Our mayor is a very hands-on type of person. This is his life. County government, looking after people, addressing when there's disasters, that has been his life. You know, so I hope the listeners understand that his passion is to do that. He's not a golfer. He can't walk like he used to. In his first term, he used to walk every lunchtime down to Suisan and come back. But he's not able to do that. But he still has the passion for the people. And that's a challenge for him. I just want to let the listeners know that he will continue to do that. And we just have to try to make sure that he rests. And that when he does rest, he feels much better.
Good. Well, I've had little discussions with him over the years about he needs to eat better and he needs to drink water. Mm-hmm. So apparently that went in one ear and out the other.
I think that if more people tell him that, then it'll register. But, you know, Harry is very focused on what he does. I mean, he's been like that. And we can be very thankful that he is the mayor and that he is able to give us the most updated information and protect the people of this island.
Okay, the unrelated topic. There still is the rest of the island to deal with. And one of those issues is on the west side of Hawaii Island, the Department of Water Supply, going on 2 years now, has had at this moment 4 wells out of service out of the 7 high elevation wells. And the most recent communication from Department of Water Supply was, if people don't cut back more, then we're going to put you on mandatory restriction of cutting back 25%. What is anybody in the county doing? You know, I understand Department of Water Supply is a semi-autonomous department, but this still is under the purview of the mayor. And it kind of feels like after 2 years, there should be somebody taking a more serious, aggressive look at this rather than just sort of threatening the users to use less water.
Well, I did have a meeting with the water director, Keith, about the situation because you sent us the questions that you're going to ask. You know, there are 14 wells in Kona, and 10 of them are currently in operation. So he said that Honoka Kau well hopefully will be in operation at the end of July if everything goes well, if there's no issues. So we're talking about Waiaha, Hualalai, and also Palani. They are in various stages, including legal and technical reviews. So there's no definite timetable at the moment. But 10% is the voluntary water conservation, which is still in effect. And I can understand the frustration of the Kona people in regards to this. But I guess the water board is trying to look at this particular issue and try to look at how private sector representatives can also be involved in this thing. But I'm not sure exactly how it really works in regards to water department, because it is, like you mentioned, a semi-autonomous. They have a board, but it has to be addressed, and we will have the conversation with the water director in regards to the concerns about water. The water.
I know they've always been working hard, but you know, 2 years, it feels like we need to call in some outside experts and get a little aggressive, because clearly in the private sector this would just not stand. So that's all. I'm glad to hear you say you're going to get a little aggressive with it. I appreciate that. Before we say aloha, Managing Director and Acting Mayor Will Okabe, what else would you like to add?
No, thank you, Sherry, for this opportunity. It's important to be transparent, and your show has always been that very issue, trying to be transparent and getting your listeners to understand what's happening in the county. And we owe that to the people of this island. And I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to give some insight as to what we're doing. We're doing everything we can, not only to address things that are happening in the Lower Puna area, but we have to address everything that happens in county government, be accountable, making sure that the money that is being collected from taxes are going to be well spent.
Thank you so much, Will Okabe. Aloha.
Aloha.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for being with us. I'm Sherry Bracken, and this is Island Issues. And we are sponsored by Regency Hualalai. Big thanks to them. And a reminder to all of you listening, there is going to be a county council meeting this coming Friday, the 29th. The budget item is reconsideration of the general excise tax, adding a quarter or a half of a percent, which would be 25 cents or 50 cents on $100. So if you have an opinion, you may testify Friday. The meeting starts at 10 a.m. in person at the Hilo Council Chambers and by video conferencing from the standard other locations. Thank you so much for joining us. I will see you next Sunday morning. And until then, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi hou.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@labo105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.